Listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folks who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. This week is all about Dino Ranch. Celebrating teamwork and friendship, Dino Ranch introduces young audiences to a magical world where dinos roam a working farm and sanctuary. Full of adventure, fun, and problem-solving, the ranch is managed by the tight-knit Cassidy family, which includes Ma, Pa, and their three children, John, Miguel, and Min. Today's guest is producer Anna Keenan. Working from the ground up in production, Anna used every experience to become the brilliant producer she is today. She shares with us how she sees production as a creative role, full of creative problem solving, how she hires with potential to grow in mind, and how once she gave herself permission to make mistakes, the process became more fun. With lots of shop talk and references to Pixar Soul, we hope you'll enjoy our conversation. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
My name is Anna Keenan. I'm an animation producer at Industrial Brothers. And I suppose it starts with the love of storytelling. Ever since I was young, I loved to play make-believe. So the joy animation gives me is those magical moments that make you say, wow, when you stand back at the end of, doesn't even have to be a film you worked on, but just when you stand back and you're just Soul, the movie Soul, I just watched that recently. That film really pulled at my heartstrings. So I think it's those moments when you just feel like you're transported.
Definitely. Soul was so good. I love when animation takes on like heavy topics like morality.
Absolutely.
Do you have any moments in particular that's happened on Dino Ranch that has made you feel proud to work on it?
There's so many moments that have made me proud. You know, when I watch it, I have the pleasure and the honor of being able to see it go from script through to final lighting and post and sound. You can't like when there's that, this is one of those moments when you can rewind. it's the magic of knowing where it's come from. Even the actors, like I can watch it and the actor and the character become one, like, so it's the whole process. It's not just like a moment in Dino Ranch. I mean, there's cute and loving moments where you're like, oh my god, where Miguel does a little dance, but because I've had the honor of being able to watch and see it grow from concept through to fruition, it really, all of it is magical. All of it brings that sort of joy and wow, because I've been embedded in it throughout the course of this past year and a bit. So all the moments to me feel like wow moments, if that makes any sense. But I definitely love the endearing character driven moments where about family and love, or just those awkward moments where you're like, where you just, you giggle out loud.
For sure. I love what you're saying too. I think that a lot of people coming into the industry don't exactly know what to make of a producer's role on a production. And I feel like, especially when you're like a production assistant, just getting your feet wet, it's interesting to kind of define what you bring to the show and how you can take ownership when your work isn't exactly taking, it's not appearing as art or as what's coming out of the characters' mouths or the animation. Like, would you say that producing's kind of like creating space?
That's actually a really great analogy. Yeah, I mean, producing, not only creating space, I mean, the producer's job is to ensure that a product is produced, like in really simplistic terms. And their responsibility is to ensure that like project is delivered on time, on budget, but also to the best or as close to the creative expectation as possible. So they're, we play that, space is a good word because you're playing that you're working or towing the line and the communication between the executives and the creative artists.
How long have you been a producer?
I've been in animation for over 17 years, and it's code. So I've done production management, associate producing, and at Industrial Brothers, I think it's been a couple of years. I have to, I came into Industrial Brothers as a production manager and then moved into producing. That's but awesome. Throughout producing the production managing and producing, there's a lot of crossover. I think the experience that I have in production is what has equipped me to become a good producer.
Isn't that kind of like the expected path in production? Is that you go from like production assistant, coordinator, supervisor, or manager, depending on the show? I know that not every show has both associate producer and then producer.
Ideally, there's different paths to get there, but working from the ground up and getting the production experience, I think, is a necessity to really understanding and being providing a training ground to develop your technical and artistic understanding of the process. So even if you're not an artist, it's important to understand and learn from all of the experts that you get the honor and privilege of working with. So the reason I've been in the industry so long is I absolutely love working with artists, and I love all of the, every project, every studio you work at, you learn little nuggets of new information or different ways of doing things, different ways of seeing. So you never hit the top. You're always growing. You're always evolving. When you think, oh, I figured this out, you get put on another project and you're starting all over again. So It's amazing for that, in that there's never 2 days that are the same.
Yeah, I'd agree with that from my experience too. Every time I think like I got this, something happens where I'm like, oh, I know nothing. So origin story, like let's go all the way back. Can you give us a brief sketch of what your childhood looked like and what inspired you to pursue animation?
I can. I was born and raised in Toronto. I have a sister who's 3 years older than me. I'm the baby in the family, and I spend a lot of time just building worlds in my head as a kid and shaping my life with my imagination. It's that storytelling aspect. I fell into animation, so I didn't know I wanted to work in animation until I was in it. So I went to Ryerson, my older sister, who has always been the source of inspiration for me. And I've always, I don't know if you have older siblings, but you kind of just follow their path. She went to Ryerson and I saw how much she was growing creatively. And then I'm like, I want to go there. So I went to Ryerson and they had a small animation component, but it was a media arts program. So you dabbled in everything. When I graduated, I got a phone call from a producer at Cup of Coffee Animation, which was a stop motion animation studio in Toronto. The producer had done a yoga training with my sister and they were looking for an assistant production manager and asked if I'd be interested in coming in for an interview. I ended up getting hired, and then the rest is history. I had an opportunity. At the time, my passion, and I still do it, was photography. So I was doing a lot of photography in the city at the time. But once you fall in, I don't know if you've ever experienced stop motion, but it really is a magical thing to experience. It's stop motion is frame by frame, like the puppets in the world is built. So you see the paper, then you actually see it built in front of you. And the animators animate frame by frame. So you create the motion by physically manipulating the puppets and the props.
Yeah, I would love to work on a stop motion project one day. Like, it seems like it would be so magical to watch the process of. I love hearing people talk about it, like stop motion animators. It just like, it seems so different, you know?
It's very tactile. You don't realize how incredible it is until you see, you see these puppets getting made in a room, and then you see these animators just moving them for, you'd be lucky if you get 8 seconds, 10 seconds, depending on a series. I'm not talking feature film, but on a series, that would be, the quota would be 8 to 15 seconds. You see them manipulating these puppets, and then suddenly you see them come to life, and the little breath in the chest, like it just... the detail. And that's hard work, standing there for 8 to 10 hours and just moving a puppet frame by frame is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And create this magic with it that you're just, and make these characters come to life. That really was the trigger. It was so, I'm grateful that I got the opportunity, and it definitely inspired me from that point.
Very cool. I always love seeing like the promotional photos or behind the scenes photos of stop motion animators like animating, and they're like contorting their bodies around the sets to make it happen and stuff.
So I love when you see animators with the mirrors and they're doing the expressions. They have a mirror at their desk and they're, how would you do that? And yeah, it really is. It's incredible. The first show that I worked on was called JoJo Circus, and it was movement. There was a lot of movement. So we had a dancer who would do reference material for the animators so that they could figure out how to make JoJo move. And so it was really cool to work on that, even just when you would get the storyboard brief where the director would have all the animators standing at a wall and he would walk them through the scenes and he would do the little dances or do the little songs. You realize it's a pretty cool, I have a pretty cool job.
Do you see any other differences from working in stop motion versus working on like another type of show like 2D or 3D?
Well, 3D is, the experience is very similar to stop motion to me, mm-hmm. because you're still going through the process of creating, sculpting a model. You're just seeing it come to life on a computer screen. So I felt very at home when I went from stop motion to 3D. 2D, they're all just so different, but they all have their own magic and their own, depending, I guess, on what the show is, their own je ne sais quoi. I enjoy working in all three formats, but stop motion, because that's where I started, there's probably a little bit of a, that's what pulled me in. So I definitely have, it sticks close to my heart.
One thing in watching Dino Ranch that I really liked was that, because I had to like look really closely twice. I was like, wait, is this stop motion? Like, just because like it, the textures were so good. And I just felt like, I don't know, everything felt, because you can have a CG show and it could kind of feel a little stiff, like, yeah. Particularly in the years past, like it's, technology is getting a lot better in our understanding of how to do things. But I just think Dino Ranch is so beautiful and has like a little bit of that feel to it, you know?
Well, and the attention to detail, the animators really have done an incredible job on Dino Ranch, bringing those characters to life and the nuances. It's all in the detail. It's all in the subtlety of the emotion and the characters and the, they add those little extra things that you're like, wow, oh my God, oh, I felt that. Yeah, I agree with you. Dino Ranch has done an incredible job with the acting and the storytelling, and really breathing life into this world.
So like when you were going up the path in production, I'm wondering, you've been in it 17 years, right? So like, was there ever a time when you were like, I'm not sure if I want to be a producer or if you wanted to pursue maybe something artistic since you were a photographer? If so, could you talk about that?
Well, I've always kept my artistic side, so I still do photography. So I never felt the lack of needing to leave animation to pursue photography or something creative, because I've always kept in touch with my creative side. I actually find producing quite creative, in that it's like a big puzzle. So you get to the start of the project and you have to predict and project all of the things that could potentially happen along the way and figure out how to course correct if those things happen. So it's always challenging, and the solutions are more often than not creative solutions to figure out how to navigate the waters. So I actually find it to be quite a creative and challenging position that keeps me intrigued and interested in staying with it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think that I don't know, because like the conversation that I've heard from like younger folks out here pursuing animation is usually like, I want to use production, like to be a production assistant, get a foot in the door and learn as much as I can, and then go off to something else. And so we have a lot of people that come through the pipeline like that. But like, I love, it sounds like you have a really healthy balance of like seeing that this is, you know, I enjoy production. It is creative work, but I also still have my creative side out, you know, doing photography. What other like self-care habits and life balance tips do you have?
My sister is always really good at reminding me, especially nowadays since we're stuck at home or working remotely. And one thing she says is to take 15 to 30 seconds, and even if that's all you do, but take 15 to 30 seconds to pause and look around you and really take in the good. So whatever, like it could be the sun beaming through your window. It could be going to your window and looking outside and watching people pass. Or I live by the water, so just looking out at the water. Just taking in the things that we take for granted every day that are actually quite miraculous, like when you really think about it. So that is something that I think is really important, that we take pause to just be present and take those breaths and be in the moment and appreciate, whether it's you have music on or you're listening to the ticking of your clock, just taking in those moments to appreciate the pause. Because we're going all the time. And I think we really need to sometimes reset. And the reset is, I like the analogy of take 15 to 30 seconds, which all of us can do to take in the good. Mm-hmm. And aside from that, you can, you know, make sure you get up and stretch, drink more water. A lot of the things we all know to maintain sort of balance. Go for a walk. If you're sitting at, it's easy working from home to be sitting there for 10 hours or 8 hours or 5 hours and realize I haven't got up from my computer in 5 hours. I haven't even eaten any food. Like I need to get up and get myself something to eat or go for a walk. Call a friend, call your parents, do something to just break up the day.
That's so good. Dino Ranch, so what's it like producing for the show? Is preschool different than other age groups you've, you know, produced for?
Producing on Dino Ranch has been a real joy. I'll start with that. It's been a real joy, and I have a fantastic team. They put their heart into everything they do, and we're always thinking about the kids that are going to be watching it and wanting to inspire them. The real difference between the two is content. Both, like, in terms of producing, the process is similar. So it would be content. And with adult shows, you can have more artistic styles that you can play with. You can go super wacky or you can be realistic, whereas preschool, usually it's a little more cute and round. So the biggest difference would be, to me, content and how far you can push it artistically, like where you can go with it. But ultimately, I mean, all the cartoons are being made by adults. So yeah, even though we have preschool and adult entertainment there, it's really just different ways of, or different styles of storytelling. But I love them both. I do a real good preschool show that just pulls at your heart like Dino Ranch. It's just everything though. I have no preference. You won't hear me saying, oh, I want to go work on that, because it's adult entertainment. I know I'm happy. This is my mantra. I'm going a little off tangent for a moment, but my mantra for my photography is, I want to find the heart in my art. But it's the same kind of thing with animation. I want to work on projects that have heart, that connect with that piece of us. So, and Dino Ranch does that.
I love that. Do you feel like you're a place in your career where you can kind of choose the projects you work on so that you ensure that they do have that heart? Or do you kind of come onto a show with the intention of encouraging the team to find the heart.
I definitely consciously let people know what shows I want to work on. So I knew I wanted to work on Dino Ranch, so I made it very clear. I also love the team, and I knew who the team would be on Dino Ranch. So, yeah, I whether, you know, sometimes you end up, well, I can't even say a project that I've been on that I haven't enjoyed, but
that's great.
I'm sure at some point in my life, I might be asked to work on a project that I'm like, I don't know. But to date, I've got to work on every project I've got to work on has been fun. But Dino Ranch, definitely, I asked if I could work on it as well. Like, at concept and development, I was finishing another show, and I let them know that I was interested.
What's the toughest part about your job?
Having to say no when you want to say yes.
That has to stink. And what are some reasons that you would have to say no? I know that's probably super broad, so no worries if you don't have an answer.
I do have an answer. Usually it comes down to budget and creative expectation. You know, the reason you have to say no is just because you need to balance the budget and the creative expectations. So, yeah, otherwise, I mean, if we didn't have that box, we would love to say yes to everything. But unfortunately, that is the biggest factor that comes into play when we do have to weigh whether or not we can do something.
So when you were first promoted into a supervisory role, how did you adapt and gain the skills needed to be a leader?
I took every opportunity to learn from those around me that I looked up to and I respected, and I just embraced all of their juicy goodness. I was lucky I got to work with so many incredible people, but really, that would be my, like, that was the biggest takeaway. I learned from my mistakes, and I gave myself, and this took me a few years, but I gave myself permission to make mistakes. We're not, like, you know, we're making cartoons. No one's gonna die. It's okay if something, we'll course correct if we need to figure it out. So that eased a lot of pressure, giving myself the permission and reminding myself that we're making cartoons, like, we're doing something fun. So, and it's okay. So that's the biggest thing. I mean, not even just with animation, even in my photography, as soon as I gave myself permission to make mistakes, it became fun. And then I just take every setback as just an opportunity to grow. The biggest thing I think you learn as you sort of move into different positions is how to listen and be present in the moment, and especially when you're working with so many different people, I think it's key that you learn how to listen. So you start by absorbing their goodness, and then as you grow and make mistakes and learn, you come back to just listening.
Like, on the thing about being present, I feel like, at least for me, it's so hard to keep my mind from wandering and keep it quiet and keep it engaged. Do you have any tips for that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm trying to remember the book that I read it from, but it was a directing actor's book. And it was when I was in university. And I'll paraphrase it. It was basically, if you really want two actors to have chemistry, tell them to listen. Eye contact, just listen. A lot, I think that's the key. If I, you know, really see the person that's sitting in front of you, whether it's on screen or in person, and keep that grounded so that you don't get caught in your thoughts and distracted. It seemed, so this book, basically, he was saying the eye contact was really key to really listening and having that chemistry on camera. But I've always thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. That is. So when everything is a priority, how do you truly prioritize what's important?
Great question. That's an important part of a producer's job. On a show where you have so many moving parts, it's not just your priorities, it's the team's priorities. So I start by working backwards with due dates, and then I speak to the experts on the team. So the experts would be the leads. I consider how much effort we need to put into each task, how much input we need from others, how it'll impact the downstream departments. And then I work backwards to figure out what is the how to prioritize the priorities, if that makes any sense. But my methodology is usually I have to create a work back schedule to see what the ripple effect is going to be, to know which one needs to be the top priority and prioritize in that way.
And kind of like an example of that would be like storyboards still have revisions, so like the animatic can't be locked to then go into animation kind of stuff, right? Like it just keeps rippling down.
That would absolutely be it. Like having the animatic not lock when you say it's going to lock, and then layout can't start, and the ripple and the cost of having shot departments sitting idle is huge. So you need to figure out really quickly when you're projecting, oh, if we don't get this resolved in the Leica or animatic, which is a storyboard in motion, if we don't get this resolved in our Leica, then we're going to have 6 people, 8 people sitting idle in the next department, and that's going to delay them, which will then delay animation, which will then delay comp. So you have to figure out quickly, well, what's the solution? How can we make sure we don't hit the next department? Do we need to get an extra person to help with revisions to get us there? So you have to, that's where you start coming up with solutions and ideas to figure out how you can continue to allow it to move down the pipeline.
Yeah, and that can really like snowball even more too, because if you have, let's say, a week for something, but they don't get it until like 2 days in, then that week bleeds into the next week, which is when they start their new episode. You know, like it could get really cumbersome over the life of a whole show.
It can. Yeah, that's why it's really important to produce for the future, so to speak, to actually anticipate what could happen a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, and get ahead of it and have your solutions in place in case know what you're going to do. And if you don't know what you're going to do, at least have the people and the expertise around you so that you can quickly pivot.
So how do you bridge the business side of animation with the artistic side? Like art can always use a little bit more money and time, but there's never enough of either, really.
Yeah, it's definitely the challenge. You bridge it by having strong communication skills. And like I was just saying, anticipating in advance what could go wrong and or how you would pivot, and then managing the expectations early on. And balancing the creative expectations of the director, the artist, the creative personnel with the financial resources available. So you're always letting everybody know where things are and being transparent so that everybody can be a part of that solution.
So fun question. What's your favorite dinosaur and why?
Tango. I'm assuming you mean she's a triceratops. I'm assuming you mean dinosaur on Dino Ranch.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go for it and say Tango. She's my favorite because I can relate to her. I love her awkwardness. She's sweet and lovable and spontaneous, but really strong. I also just love her design and how she comes to life on screen. So she would be my favorite dinosaur on the Dino Ranch.
Yeah, she's great. And I'm definitely getting those vibes from you so far in this interview.
Okay, well, I'm very awkward. Awkward is the right word for me.
Oh, I didn't mean that you were awkward. I think you're being super pleasant. I was more meaning the sweet, the sweetness and the strong.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I didn't even like pick up that you said awkward.
Yeah, but awkward. I actually find my awkwardness endearing, so I don't look at it as a negative at all. I'm like, oh, I'm awkward. And I actually think that's what I like about Tango. She just is who she is, and she embraces it.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I think we're probably all awkward in some way. Because I know I'm super awkward, and even when I don't mean to be, and sometimes I find it charming, and sometimes I'm just like, why? So it depends on the day. But I love that you embrace it.
Yeah, I try. I mean, you have to laugh at yourself.
What's the best advice you've ever received about what you do?
I'm gonna throw 3 thoughts out. It's okay to make mistakes, which we touched on earlier. Listen more than you speak, and be kind always would be the different aspects and different moments in my life, but all of those ring true and all of those hold a lot of weight for me.
I love that. Have you ever received any bad advice, and why was it bad?
I'm gonna give you a quote, because we all know this quote, and I don't think it's the best advice. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So it sounds like a great quote, but it's more like, if you love what you do, you'll kind of work all the time. And I'm not saying that's bad, but if you keep chasing a work-life balance that's always fun and easy, you're going to miss out on the amazing opportunities and lessons. Because work can be tough, weird, difficult, complicated, beautiful, fun, easy, all at the same time. And if you take every bump in the road as a sign that you're going in the wrong direction, then you won't get far. So I'm saying it's okay to love what you do, but you will work hard. Probably harder if you love what you do.
Yeah, that's so true. And I'm so glad you bring that up, because I do think we think it would be easy, but it is really hard, and you get discouraged and then you start questioning everything. And I think this kind of touches on also especially people who freelance or do commissions and get underpaid for what they're worth, or take a job that pays less, you know, and I feel like it really tricks people into understanding the value of what they actually do.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you for bringing that up. Have you ever had any dry spells during your career, and how did you stay optimistic to continue looking for work?
Everyone has dry spells. I just think it's important not to let them get you down. And just to always remind yourself that the right fit is just around the corner. So I just stay positive, be patient, and I better myself in the meantime, like working on my professional development or my photography, and just keeping in touch with people I know in the industry and my friends in the industry.
And when you say development, do you have any resources you could share with us, like any books or classes you've taken?
I can, after this, I can definitely send you some links for sure.
Oh, that would be great. I'll put them in the show notes for everybody. So I'd be remiss to not ask, because you hire for the team, what do you look for on resumes or portfolios? I would love to hear for production roles as well as artistic roles.
I'm probably not going to give you the answer that you want, because I love to give people's potential to grow more weight than their current portfolio or their skill level. And it's as much about what I think they'll do tomorrow as what they can do today. So when I'm looking at people's portfolios, I'm looking at what skills are transferable. I'm looking at how we connect when we're in the interview, what they've done, what their interest is, what their passion is. And then when it's possible, I always like to hire people who are smarter than me. So those are my two things. Their potential, and then, you know, yeah, I don't know if that answered your question. It's not getting specific to portfolios and resumes, but ultimately, I think everyone is capable of anything. It's people live up to or down to whatever bar you set. And I believe in everybody that walks through the door and says they want to do this. So it's a matter of showing that they're really interested, and where they want to go is a big part of that, and their potential to grow is a big part of that.
No, I love that answer even more than what I was expecting you to say. I wish more people would hire like that, because I feel like a lot of the hiring practice I've heard is that they want someone who can hit the ground running in the style and at the rate they need them to produce work, you know? So I love the idea of hiring by potential and looking for the transferable skills. Because I know that shows you want to have some experienced folks, but also some newer folks that can be trained up to the level of the others. And you also just want a good mix of people in general. Do you kind of keep that in mind when hiring? You look at the overall team and how the person would fit?
For sure. For sure. I think it's also personalities, right? Who's in my team, and how would these... So, you know, there's a lot of factors you put into consideration when you're hiring and you're meeting people. You know, I wanted to give you it's not an analogy, so that's not the right word, but Like in stop motion, when I was first working in stop motion, nobody knew how to, there, like every single person walking through the door did not have stop motion experience. There was no other studio in the city. So everybody that came in was learning and yes, had to hit the ground running. But I mean, that's how you learn. That's how you, I mean, for me, I could read 100 books, but you know how I'm going to remember? I'm going to remember because I'm doing it. My point in saying that is sometimes you'll walk in and you don't have the exact experience that they're looking for, but you know you can do it because you know you. It's, I'm going to bring it back to soul. What makes you you? That is the key when looking to hire. That is what you're selling. What makes you you?
I love it. So, okay. We're almost done with the interview. We're going to go into some fun questions now. Like, who is your favorite fictional character and why?
This is more personal. So I'm going to say Sherlock Holmes. And I'm saying Sherlock Holmes because Sherlock Holmes really connects me with my mom. My mom and I would get lost in the world. And I really love him because he's a flawed hero. He's not perfect. He was a drug addict, but he was brilliant. And he never saw money as his motivation to get things done. He didn't care if he got credit for solving a crime. He admitted when he made mistakes. So I really like Sherlock Holmes. Like, and I can get thoroughly engaged in his shows and in the stories. And then there's one scene from Sherlock Holmes that I just want to share because it makes me smile. And it makes it, so I watched this scene with my mom and it's Watson and Sherlock Holmes. And then Watson asks Sherlock Holmes why he doesn't know something that was really simple. And Sherlock points to his head and says something like, "I deleted it." And then Watson's like, "What do you mean you deleted it?" And then Sherlock answers and says, "This is my hard drive. I only put useful information in here." And I'm paraphrasing it, but the reason I loved it is because it brought so much joy to my mom. And whenever she forgot something, she would just turn to me and she said, "Deleted it." I don't know. It that's the joy of filmmaking. It can gift you these moments like that you can have with your loved ones or with people. And so every time I think of that, it just makes me smile. So there. That's my answer.
That's beautiful. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Even though it wasn't like you living out that moment, it's now like a shared experience and a memory. And mm-hmm. You're so right. Storytelling is so good for those connecting with other people. And I love that. Who is your favorite creator, artist, writer, producer, whoever, and why?
My mom didn't pursue a career in art, but she taught my sister and I the importance of like painting outside of the lines and being messy and loving every moment of it and not being perfect. And she let me explore my imagination and transport myself from our backyard to like wherever I wanted to go. I'd be digging holes in my backyard and I'd say, "Oh mom, I'm going here today." And she let me believe that I could get there. So she let me dig as deep as I needed to dig where I could fully put my body into this hole because she wanted me to believe that I could get to this other world. And she wrote beautiful stories and had such a colorful imagination. I don't know if you saw the film Big Fish, but she's our big fish. Like, we don't know where the truth ended and the thick, like, and if it was all true, but she's so colorful in how she would write stories and stuff that she's definitely my inspiration for everything that I do.
Wow. I want to cry. That is so beautiful. Oh my God. That's the best answer. So who are you digging right now that we should check out? Just like promote other folks that you've worked with or haven't worked with, just anyone at all.
There's so many people, but I'm going to shout out Julie Black. I don't know if you know Julie Black, but she's everything. She's like a true Canadian icon, singer, songwriter, producer, actress, philanthropist, leader. She started a health movement called 100 Strong and Sexy. And she's just a great source of inspiration. On Instagram, she's @MissJulieBlack. So definitely, she's somebody that I definitely a really strong woman that I think everybody should check out. My sister, obviously, she works for the Toronto Community Acupuncture Clinic, and she's incredible. I have a good friend who's an incredible artist called Elixir Elliott, and his art, he's a graffiti artist, and his work is just, like, you can just see his story unfold through his art. It's just honest, and he has so much humility, and he's incredible. So yeah, there's a couple people. I mean, I could send you a list that goes on and on and on.
I will take that list. Final question. What is something you know now that you wish you knew sooner?
I won't say this is something that I know now that I wish I knew sooner, but something I do more now that I wish I did sooner. I wish I had the courage to speak my truth and know that everything's going to be okay. That would be the, if I was speaking to my younger self, that's what I would tell them.
I love that. What does speaking your truth look like?
Not being afraid.
There's so much to be afraid of though, Anna.
That would be my, you know, and I'm going to bring it back to, I don't mean to be a plug for Soul, but it, you know, that's why that resonated with me. Like the asking the question, what is it that makes you you? And then that anecdote at the end of the film where she says, I heard the story about a fish, and he swims up to an older fish and says, I'm trying to find this thing called the ocean. And then the older fish says, the ocean. And then the younger fish says, or so the older fish says, that's where you're in right now. And the younger fish says, this is just water. What I want is the ocean. And I'm just like, yes, that's it. We're living it. We're living it. And anyway, but yeah, I think our courage, right, is it's having the courage to do things in spite of our fear, right? So you're speaking your truth in spite of the fact that you're not, you know, it's a hard moment. I don't know if this is from anything, but it's like, whenever I get really nervous about something, I remind myself it takes 6 seconds of courage, like just 6 seconds of courage to say it. And then once you say it, it's not nearly as bad as you thought it would be. But it's just getting over that. You know, you spend days and days and days anticipating and making it larger than life in your head. But it just takes that like 6 seconds. And once you're through it and on the other side, you're like, whoa, that wasn't so bad. So it's just having the courage to get through those difficult seconds to get to the truth so that you don't, you know, yeah, that would be the thing that I would tell myself.
That is so good. Are you on social media or have a website to plug?
I am. I'm AnnaKeenan_photography on Instagram. And my website's AnnaKeenan.com.
Awesome. I can't wait to look at your photography. Okay, so to check out Dino Ranch, it's on CBC and Disney Junior every Monday at 12 p.m. in each time zone and on Disney Now after the premiere. Anna, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been amazing.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Toons. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. Special thanks to Nicole Schroeder. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.